got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 416. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about castles and cathedrals, villages and festivals as we go to Southwest England. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is the tale of Amir Ranama. Mr. Ranama was flying to Manchester and was dismayed when his bag failed to arrive. He filled out all the necessary paperwork and was eventually reunited with his bag. Unfortunately, at that point, the police did detect the 200,000 British pounds worth of opium in the bag, and he was arrested. If you're interested in getting into the hotel business, there's a hotel for sale in New York City. Now, this is a hotel that won the TripAdvisor Dirtiest Hotel in the World Award 3 times. Also in 1999, a clerk killed a coworker near the front desk, and another body was found a few years later under a bed. Surprisingly enough, of all the hotels in New York, the 446 on TripAdvisor, this hotel ranks 361. So there's a number of hotels that get worse ratings than it. So if you're interested, the Hotel Carter is for sale. One thing that won't be on sale much longer in California, if a new law passes, will be tickets to SeaWorld's killer whale shows. A new bill being proposed in California would outlaw the performances of killer whales. If you're not sure why, then you haven't seen the movie Blackfish. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Edith. Edith was on the show previously talking about her native Tyrol in Austria, but has come to talk about her new home in England. Edith, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again, Chris. It's great to be back.
And I say England, but we're not going to cover all of England. So tell us which region we're going to be covering.
We'll be talking about the southwest of England, which is roughly the area southwest of Bristol, which is quite a big city just south of Wales and about 2 hours west of London, just so that people have a picture.
Okay. And I think a lot of people have plans to visit London and they have plans to visit England, but they don't know necessarily the region that you're talking about. So why should they? Why should they go there?
Well, if you talk about England in general, it is a very nice place in terms of its archetypical English. If you go away from the big cities, you've got this really narrow country lanes, you've got the old stone walls, you've got the houses, you've got the hedgerows, you've got the birds chirping, people working in their gardens, you can sit outside and enjoy cream tea, and you've got the national parks of Exmoor and Dartmoor, and the beautiful coastline, of course, as well.
And what drew you to that area?
For me, it was work.
Okay.
And I had never been before, and I was actually really delighted to see that it was such a nice part of the United Kingdom that I was going to.
Okay. And then how would you recommend we tackle it? Should we home base in, I know you're in Churchill.
I'm in Churchill, which is a tiny little place about 18 miles south of Bristol. It really depends on what you want to do. If you're out to discover the heart of the countryside, then it would probably be best to stay in a place like the city of Wells, which is a nice, rather small city, but it's got a beautiful cathedral and a cathedral square, which is like a nice meadow out in front of the cathedral and a nice old part of the town, which has a nice market square as well. You could also station yourself in Bristol and then just do trips from the city of Bristol if you're more the city dweller.
Okay. And then this sounds like something where we're going to want to, as they say in England, hire a car.
A hire car would definitely be handy, although you could do most of the things that I like doing in and around the area. You could do it by public transport as well, or if you're a very outdoorsy and sporty person, also on a bike.
Okay. And then let's talk about the itinerary that you would recommend.
Well, I would definitely recommend in Bristol, you should go and see the Bristol Suspension Bridge. Bristol is an interesting city because it's quite close to the sea and it's got the River Avon. And over the thousands and thousands of years, the River Avon has cut a gorge And Bristol actually sits on a couple of hills, and one of these hills is cut in two by the River Avon, and what we've got now is the Avon Gorge, and there is a suspension bridge that spans the gorge, and it is pretty amazing. And you've got this deep cliff going down and the tidal River Avon underneath it. So the Bristol Suspension Bridge should definitely be on your itinerary.
And you said a suspension bridge. I pictured something really modern, but as I look at a picture here, that is not what I'm looking at.
No, it was, I don't have the exact fact, but it was built by Brunel, and Brunel was an engineer that he was responsible for so many buildings in the UK. And it was, I think, one of the, when it was first built, it was just massive. It was mind-blowing for the people, and it still is. If you stand there, it is a couple hundred years old, I think.
It looks like it finished in 1864.
1864, yeah, it is a massive building, and the people of Bristol are very proud when it comes to their suspension bridge. And there's only been one day in the history of the Bristol Suspension Bridge that it was ever closed for wind, and that was a couple weeks ago when we had the massive storms.
Oh, okay.
And it's free as well, so you can walk across the bridge, and there's a very nice public park on the other side, which is Ashton Court. So if you're in Bristol and you just walk across the bridge and then you follow the road and you come to Ashton Court. Ashton Court once belonged to a family that was in the tobacco trade. Bristol and Bristol Harbour were massive harbours when the United Kingdom had a big empire. And they made a lot of money in the tobacco trade. And Ashton Court is now a public park. And it's got wonderful trees and it's got a deer park. And you can just go for a stroll there, which is fantastic.
Excellent. Where to next?
So we've now covered the area around Bristol, and something else that is quite interesting is the village of Cheddar. And
Cheddar,
when you hear Cheddar,
like
the cheese, exactly. Cheddar has got a gorge, and in the gorge there are a lot of caves. And to Cheddar, the verb to Cheddar is actually a special way of making cheese. And they used to make the cheese and then store it in the gorge to have it ripen there. So you can go and look at the massive caves where they had the cheese, and you can have a look at the gorge, which is the biggest inland cliff in all of England. And they've just cleared the trees over the past couple of years. You can actually really see the gorge well now. And it's a nice walk up, and they've got a viewing point up there, a little tower that you can climb. And you can also see the Somerset Levels, which is a low-lying area just south of Cheddar. And from up the hill, you can see that very well. And Cheddar itself, the gorge is really nice, and there are lots of cafes and shops. But it might be falling into the a tourist trap if you go and have tea there, because the prices are quite high. And if you've just come down in a bus from Bristol, there is actually a really nice little place quite close by called Exbridge. And Exbridge is a medieval town. It's got a medieval square with King John's hunting lodge there, which you can visit in the summer months, and it's amazing. And it's an amazing old structure. And there's also a little cafe and several pubs as well on the market square, and you can sit outside in the summer if the weather's nice, or it's really quaint and lovely old pubs and cafes where you can have a sandwich or a checkered potato, which is one of the staple lunchtime favorites of the Brits anyway.
And you mentioned cheese, and my thoughts immediately went to England and cheese rolling, but that's just a little further north, just the other side of Bristol, right? Up in
that
Gloucester.
Would be in the Cotswolds, in the Gloucester area, okay. Yes.
All right, then.
There was something going on about having it outlawed because I'm having rules and regulations against it because of health and safety.
I think they've changed it to use artificial cheese, and I don't know why that would be. Maybe it's has better safety characteristics.
Maybe it's not that heavy, but that's just...
That could be it. But I interrupted you. Where to next?
So we're Cheddar or Exbridge now, and I've already mentioned the town of Wells. Mm-hmm. Wells is just towards the east of Cheddar. It has a cathedral, and it has the Bishop's Palace. And you just think it's a place that isn't real. It's out of a fairy tale in a way. If you go to the city centre of Wales, you've got the massive cathedral. It's just mind-blowingly big, because Wells itself is a rather small town. It's not huge. but it's got this massive cathedral. And if you stood in front of it, it is just so impressively big. You can go and see the cathedral, which even if you're not religious, I would really recommend you do. And then you've got Bishop's Palace, which has still got a water around it as a protective feature. And especially if you go there with somebody you love, it's just so romantic. You can sit there and you can have a look out at Bishop's Palace, which looks like a fairy tale castle. And if you can time it right, Wells has got a market on Wednesdays in the mornings from like 8 to about 2 o'clock, and the same on Saturdays. And it's on the market square, really close to the cathedral. And it's just something out of a picture book again. You've got lots of stalls and they sell more or less everything. On Wednesdays they're more food oriented, but there's lots of food on Saturdays as well. But on Saturdays you can also buy handicrafts they make in the area, cattle skins and sheep skins and shoes and whatever you want to have, you can buy there. It's kind of like one of these old fashioned village square or town square markets. It's really nice.
Excellent.
So we've been to Wells now. I would definitely recommend going to Dunster Castle. Dunster is near Minehead, so we're traveling further south now, and we go towards the National Park of Exmoor. E-X-M-O-O-R.
Okay.
It is a national park that has a lot of moorland, so it's rather barren. But once you drop into the valleys, they're really lush. And the people used to use the lower-lying areas for agriculture, whereas the higher parts, they could only send cattle and mostly sheep up to. But it is the barrenness of the high ridges compared to the lushness of the valleys with the rivers that's just absolutely magnificent. And they've also got the Exmoor ponies there, which is a special hardy breed of ponies that roam semi-wild on the moor. And it's quite a sight if you go there and you just go for a walk and you suddenly see a herd of ponies cross your path, and they won't run away. You can't walk up to them and pet them, but they will walk away from you, so they're semi-wild. So the Exmoor ponies are quite something. And Dunster Castle is just a magnificent castle with very, very nice grounds around with beautiful gardens. The English are known for their gardening traditions anyway, but Dunster Castle definitely has very interesting grounds as well, and especially if you're traveling with kids.
Is there any particular things that we should see at the castle? We should take a tour?
You should go and see it on your own, so you don't have to take a castle. It is an old Bailey castle, and it was later used as a country house. And it is on top of a steep hill, so it overlooks, you can actually see the coast as well from there. It is not so big that you can't see it all in one go. So I think you should just go and explore it at your own pace. And if you want to, they do tours, obviously, but you could just go on your own as well.
Okay.
Something else you should go and see, what they have in the southwest as well, which you can just do step by step, or just, you don't have to do all of it in one go, is the Southwest Coast Path. And it is just, as the name says, it is a coastal path. And it goes all the way from Minehead, which is really close to Dunster, around the southwest coast of England. And the coast is just beautiful if the weather's nice, and you go up and down the coastline, and there are beautiful beaches, and you've got the ocean glistening out ahead of you. And if the weather's nice and you've got good visibility, if you're in the Exmoor area, you can actually see as far as Wales and the hills of Wales on the other side of the Bristol Channel. So that's quite something.
And I'm picturing we're walking across farmers' fields and closing the gate behind us,
it's
using the English right of way system.
Yes, especially if you're from like a country like the United States where you don't have a right of way system. Back in the medieval ages, all of England was crisscrossed by footpaths, and what you have in England is you've got tons and tons of footpaths that are all over the place. You can go from A to B to C to E to Z on a footpath or a bridleway. And the council, the local council, has a duty to keep these paths open to the public, and they may have to make them so that you can still use them. So if you take a map, and I really recommend taking a map because they're not always signposted. So mm-hmm. you need to have a map and preferably a compass, especially if you go out onto the moors. You should have a compass because the weather changes quite dramatically quickly if you are anywhere in the southwest of England, because we're so close to the coast. And the weather just comes in over the ocean and it changes so quickly. So you can be in a nice summer's day and an hour later everything's covered in mist and you can't really see where you're going. But the footpath system is just amazing. And if you're walking on the southwest coastal path, it will definitely be waymarked. So if you are planning on going walking and you don't feel so happy using a compass or using a map, then using one of the national trails, which the southwest coastal path is one of them, is definitely recommended, because they are signposted. And in terms of walking paths, they are more or less a highway, so you can't miss them. But they're quite undulating, so it's up and down all the time. So if you're out for a really relaxing stroll, you might only want to embark on like half an hour of it, because even though they don't have any mountains in the southwest of England, it does go up and down quite a bit, so you accumulate quite a lot of altitude gain over the course of a day.
Is there a particular, you mentioned the weather, is there a particular time of year that you would recommend, or a particular day of year that you would recommend visiting this area?
In terms of weather, it is quite changeable. It is mm-hmm. a moderate climate. We're influenced by the Gulf Stream. And if you look at the world map, if you draw the line over, we would be like somewhere around Newfoundland or that far north, I think. But because of the Gulf Stream, the weather is quite mild and moderate. So for example, this year we had hardly any frost over the course of the winter, although 2 years ago we had a lot of snow, and England just comes to a standstill if there's snow. So winter, I would say winter generally don't come. If you have the choice, don't come in winter, just because it's all grey and there are no... It is what makes England so beautiful is that it's such a green island. Mm-hmm. If you can't choose the date you come, make it anything from late March to end of October, probably early October, because then you've got all the trees have their leaves on and it's all green. And spring is actually a very nice time because of all the bulbs are flowering. So, for example, there are loads and loads of snowdrops. You've got whole woodlands covered in snowdrops. And
that's a white flower?
That's a white flower, yes. Mm-hmm. Or you've got daffodils, and there are lots of wild daffodils out as well. Or people have planted daffodil bulbs, and over the years they've become wild and they've bred, and now you've got entire meadows filled with daffodils, which is quite a sight as well. Or wild garlic or bluebells. Wild garlic is white and bluebells are blue, and sometimes they occur at the same time in the same woodland, and then you can imagine the entire woodland being filled with white and blue flowers. And the wild garlic, if you step on it, you will know you've stepped on it, because you can smell quite a pungent garlic smell. And it's just absolutely beautiful. It's really, really nice.
And then in terms of day of the year, any particular festivals or holidays that are just, you've got to see it to believe it?
You've got to see to believe is the Glastonbury Festival. Mm-hmm. It's one of the mothers of all festivals. And I think even people who've never been to England have probably heard of the Glastonbury Festival.
Music festival.
It's a music festival indeed. And the Rolling Stones, for example, opened it last year. And it's very big. Although you have to be very careful to secure tickets, because they sell out within more or less seconds.
And I'm picturing tens of thousands of people.
It is tens of thousands of people. And they all wear wellies, because it tends to be a very mucky festival because of the weather.
Ah, Willie's Wellington.
Yes, boots. Wellington boots. Yes, sorry.
I was trying to translate from English to English there. Okay.
Yeah, Wellington boots, yeah. It's a very relaxed festival, and Glastonbury is just south of Wales. It's about 10 miles, I'd say, or probably even just 5 miles, and it's a completely different world. Wales is a very middle-class and rather posh town. People talk nicely, and you've got the market, whereas Glastonbury is also said to be the mythic home of Avalon, this old ancient kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it's got Glastonbury Tor, which is an old tower on a hill over the levels of Somerset. And Glastonbury is this absolutely hippie town. You will see people reading your palm and reading cards, and you have tons of hippie shops where you can buy all kinds of herbs and incense and whatever you're... If you're hippie, you will love Glastonbury. And if you can combine a visit to Wells and Glastonbury, and if you can do it within a day, it's just... It's black and white. It is so cool. The change within a couple of miles is just absolutely amazing.
It's like chalk and cheese, then you're saying.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Any other places that we should hit within the area?
If you can make it, go down to Dartmoor. Mm-hmm. Dartmoor is also a national park, and it's got quaint little villages that are settled in the protected areas in the valleys. There are lots of places where you can have cream tea. And cream tea might sound a bit odd to somebody who's not been introduced to it. So would you pour cream into your tea or something? And it is actually clotted cream. Clotted cream is a milk product. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like heavy cream or a whipped cream.
It's very heavy cream. It's like if you whip cream for a long, long time, you don't. You kind of go towards the butter side, mm-hmm. and it's a very southern specialty, buttery substance that you put onto a local delicacy called a scone or mm-hmm. a scone. Depends on where you're from, and there are lots of stories on whether you should put the cream on first and then strawberry jam, or whether you actually put strawberry jam on first and then cream on top. So people can go into rows about what should come first. But I'd say just have it because it's delicious. A scone is a flour-based biscuit. It isn't really sweet. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sweet. And they come in either a cheese scone, but then you wouldn't have it with cream and strawberry jam. Or you have a fruit scone, which has got raisins or sultanas in it. And then you have it with cream and strawberry jam. And it has come from the southwest of England. And it's now spreading all over England and all the way up to Scotland just because people love it so much. But traditionally speaking, it is from the southwest of England.
Well, and since Starbucks has them, we can get them all over the place now in the U.S.
Starbucks has them in the U.S. as well. Yeah. Oh, wow. I think I must go back to the U.S. and see for myself. Then you should try it in the southwest of England because that's where it mm-hmm. comes from, and see whether it's any different. And there are lots of places that sell them, and like country homes, and then you sit on the balcony or a terrace of a big stately home and overlook their grounds and have cream tea and sip it, and it's really nice.
And you mentioned having cream tea and overlooking the grounds. Are there any particular places you would recommend to stay that would be interesting experiences?
There's one place, actually two places. Nearer to Bristol, I would recommend the little cafe in Exbridge I've already mentioned, mm-hmm. or Bunwell Castle. It is actually a folly castle, so it's not that old. It was built, I think, at the end of the 19th century, early 20th century. But it overlooks the Chew Valley, the Upper Chew Valley, and a village called Winscombe, and it's got this nice terrace, and the landlord serves the tea, and you sit there on the terrace and you overlook the hills, the Mendips, and it was really, really nice. It's one of my favorite places to have cream tea. In the summer they're open all day, every day in the afternoon, but if you come in the shoulder season, it's best to call first and see if they're actually open. And if you're down in Dartmoor, there are obviously hundreds of places and you will see signs out everywhere. But one place that is particularly nice, I think, is the Two Bridges Hotel near a town called Princetown on Dartmoor. Mm-hmm. And they've got this old ancient bridge there and over the river. I think it is the River Dart, but I'm not 100% sure. And it is a very nice old hotel. And if the weather isn't that nice, still head there because they've got a massive open fireplace and they've got sofas and couches in front of the fireplace. And you can just sit there and huddle together and have a nice cup of tea when the weather's not that nice.
Excellent. I have been to England, but I haven't been to this part of England. What's going to surprise me?
If you go there in the summer, you might actually be surprised how good the weather can be. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be super hot. And something that might bring a smile to many people's faces is if I tell you that last year there was a weather warning out and people said, it was on the radio, they said, please make sure you drink enough. It's going to be really hot today. Make sure you go and get dehydrated and you cool down. We will reach temperatures of 25 degrees centigrade today.
Okay.
And yeah, do I need to say more? It can be really nice, but the temperatures are moderate. So people from places like Arizona or that's somewhere in the south of the United States, they might definitely want to bring a jumper.
Well, and just for those people who don't think in Celsius, that is not even 80 degrees in Fahrenheit. So
people have a different perception of temperature.
Excellent.
Here in this country. But apart from that, beautiful countryside, bring your walking shoes.
Do you have a favorite walk? You mentioned the coast walk.
The coast walk is definitely something you should do. If you want to walk somewhere closer to Bristol, I would definitely recommend the Mendips. It is an area of outstanding natural beauty, just about 15 to 20 miles south of Bristol. You can go for a walk directly from Cheddar, which I've already mentioned, mm-hmm. into the Mendips. One walk that I like especially is if there is a pub called the Crown Inn in Churchill, and it is a pub that has to be seen. It is very rustic, and it's got a lot of tradition and culture, and it's got its own quaint feel to it, and it is frequented by locals, which is always a very good sign. And they only serve food for lunchtime, and they say the evenings are for drinking only. But if you go there, if you have the pub as a starter, because they've got quite a big car park, and then go for a walk, it's about a 12-kilometer round trip. That would be about 8 miles, I think. Mm-hmm. And you go on into Roeberra, which is a forested area, and then you go up onto a hill which is called Beacon Batch, like the beacon light. It's called Beacon Batch. And the area around Beacon Batch during the Second World War was used to create a fake Bristol. So they lit up Beacon Batch and the area around it, and Bristol itself was in a blackdown. Mm-hmm. So that when the German planes came in, that they would drop all the bombs on the uninhabited area of Beacon Batch. And nowadays it is quite an interesting and varied walk, because you walk through forested areas and then you come on to Heathland, which is quite rare so close to a big city like Bristol. And everything else is so green and lush. And then you come up onto that Heathland and you walk up to the trig point up on Beacon Batch, and then you can come down via an old ancient hill fort.
The trig point.
A trig point is a when they were Ordnance Survey is the the British map making company.
Right.
And the British maps are actually really, really good. And the trig point is what they used for trigonometry to measure out distances. So from each and every trig point.
So it's a medallion on the rock or something.
They occur all over the UK, and from each trig point, you should actually be able to see at least two other trig points.
Got it.
And it's usually about a meter high, so that would be 3 feet high, and it is a structure made of either concrete or bricks.
Okay.
It's kind of like you've got crosses on the summits and Yelps, and sometimes people just like to go to some place where there's a trig point because it gives them a focus to go to and something they can kind of tick off. There are actually people who walk to all the trig points in the UK. So
interesting.
But you definitely know you're on the summit if you are at the trig point.
And speaking of people, is there any locals that you would really love for everybody to meet?
I'd just say go meet people, talk to people. They're very friendly. Chat to them. If you meet people out on the walk, they will smile at you and greet you and say hello. Just chat to them for a second about the weather, and then they will talk to you about their country. And Bristolian is actually a local dialect. The Southwest does have its own dialect, and Bristolian is a very strong variety of this dialect. It's a so-called rhotic dialect, so it rolls the R.
Oh, okay.
And I can't put a Bristolian accent on, but it is quite distinct for the area, and it always brings a smile to my face because it just almost feels like home already because I've been here for so long now. And if you are in Bristol, go to the markets and talk to people and see if you can find somebody who can still speak a true and thick Bristolian, because it is something else. It's really cool.
Excellent. Before I get to my last three questions, do you have anything else that people should know before they go to Southwest England?
If you don't feel comfortable driving on the wrong side of the road, which is the left, don't rent a car, because if you go anywhere away from any A roads, an A road is usually a wider road, roads can get very narrow, and you also have to be able to back up for hundreds of meters sometimes.
Because you'll meet somebody coming the other way.
There will be somebody coming the other way, and people do go quite fast on these narrow lanes as well, so you have to watch the road all the time. It's not like being on a highway and you just go. You have to be very alert all the time.
And I'm picturing the smallest of these roads, you could have somebody reach out both the left and the right side and touch a brick wall.
Yes, definitely. 100%. Or a hedge. Yes.
Or a hedge or something, yes.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. And I've had people come and say they wouldn't dare to go any faster than like 5 miles an hour. And if you stay here for long enough, you will go like 40, 50 miles an hour on them. You just get used to it. You wouldn't get anywhere if you don't. You just have to be very, very vigilant and alert and have the foot on the brake as well, just to be able to make sure you can stop the car.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Southwest England.
Can people have a row whether it is cream first or jam first?
I can imagine that is not going to happen a lot of other places.
No.
And finish this sentence. You really know you're in the southwest of England when what?
When you can visit the coast in the morning, then have cream tea in a castle in the afternoon, and then go and enjoy a good nightclub in Bristol in the evening.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize southwest England in three words, what three words would you use?
Hills steeped in history. It's four words.
We'll give you four. It's your second time on the show. You get a bonus word.
I got a bonus word. Thank you, Chris.
And again, if you enjoyed listening to Edith now, you might want to go back and listen to that show about the Tyrol. Lots more hiking mentioned in that episode as well.
Yeah, and see if my accent actually changed over the past 4 years.
I think it has, actually. I believe it has.
So all the linguists out there, go and compare.
Well, thank you so much for coming back on the show and telling us about your new home in Southwest England.
Thank you very much for having me. Bye-bye, Chris.
In news from the community this week, I heard from T. Nick, who said, enjoying your pieces. I listened to your piece on Pittsburgh. I hope you have gotten there. That has to be the most underrated city in the United States. I'm a New England snob. I think most large cities in the USA outside of New England and the Northwest are ugly and drab. I visited a few years ago and was shocked how nice it was. I was expecting a dingy dump. I now recommend it to European visitors who want to see an interesting and unique city. I hope you have since made it there. I wrote back, I have not actually made it to Pittsburgh. I have been very near there. I have been around that area. My daughter actually went to college in the other end of the state, but my first trip to Pittsburgh is still sometime in my future. Jim commented on the episode that we did last week on Nova Scotia. Chris, I was glad to hear you interject about the deportation of the Acadians. It would have been wrong to have a podcast about Nova Scotia without that being mentioned, but it seems your guest was unaware of that part of our history. And let's just say not everyone is as much of a history geek as I am. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also join the Facebook community or follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. To send a pre-populated tweet, go to amateurtraveler.com/love. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I should be heading home, but maybe not today.